Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. I'm your host, Dr. Pat Basile, and this is one of about 23 hours of live radio we do with the show. And we've especially named this our Street Smart Spirituality Hour. I want to thank all of the people that have been filling in with me while I've been away taking care of some family matters and making sure that the mom is okay and everything is working out just well. As a matter of fact, I learned something really incredible that I want to share with you guys for the first time. What I learned is that when we have aging parents, in addition to making sure that we take care of all of the fabulous things we do to keep them safe, to keep them well, there is an aspect of this that I believe that we need to plug into, and that is to plug into keeping their level of spirituality connected and integrated. And so this trip for me, this time away, has been an incredible way for me to create a new contribution. And what I've discovered is that, and we are going to start this at the place that she is right now, staying. We are starting a group with all of the tenants here at this place so that on Fridays they can plug in to different aspects of spirituality. And so for me, that becomes a new passion of mine, something that I didn't even recognize was needed. You know, 23 hours on radio, taking this very powerful message out into the world that is integrates mind, body, spirit, the things that we have in the material world, and have now found out that this is a place in our society where people not only need our love, but they need a way to connect with each other. So I'm thrilled to be back on air with you to tell you that there are ways that we are creating a template for folks, and we're going to share it so that we can provide connection within these institutions, within these places that our elderly are staying, so that they can connect. We're actually starting a group and a club, and I have a number of people that come on the air with me, and I'm going to be asking my guests to volunteer to plug in to help some of these facilities across the country. And so I want to thank you all for being so patient with us, and I'm thrilled to be back. I'm here with Dr. Thomas Hansen today, and we're talking today with someone that has a career as a mathematics education researcher, an author, a teacher. Maybe he can help me with my research, my postdoctoral research here. He began teaching career in the Peace Corps in Liberia, and his work has evolved into being a spokesperson beyond anything that I can talk to you about. And what I mean by that is each of us gets to be spokespeople. We get to be spokespeople in different ways. I mean, his career, and we'll talk to him about that, and the wide range of the things that he has done, has brought him to this place where he now is a singer, songwriter, guitarist, focusing on songs and topics on the environment, on peace, on justice, on spirituality. And he has a special gift to give all of you today. You know, Dr. Hansen, there is much we can say about your journey, and we're going to talk about that today. But, you know, going out in the Peace Corps in Liberia in 1964 and then traveling around the world, being able to tap into different energies, one would take a look at your journey and ask the question, what has been the primary motivation for the decisions that you've made in your life?
Well, first, Dr. Pat, thank you for having me on the show, and it's great to be here. And if I could digress just one moment about your first comments, my parents were in a care center for 10 years, and they just both died last December, 4 days apart. Mm. My father died, and we expected that, and then my mother died 4 days later, the day before his funeral, and she and I were having lunch, and she said, I can't bear to see him buried, and she had a heart attack right at that moment.
Oh, my goodness.
So the spirituality was so important during those four in-between days and throughout both my parents' life. So what you're saying is so critical. And I feel that very closely, still getting over that. You don't ever get over it, but anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as...
Well, let me just comment on that,
okay.
You know, Dr. Hansen, because I consider myself pretty connected. You know what I'm saying? I consider myself plugging in, and from what people tell me, doing an extraordinary service. And yet, in my own mind, the light bulb didn't go on, you know, to look at the people that are closest to me in my life and say, oh, my gosh, are they getting this kind of information? What do we do to help folks be uplifted, inspired, get informed, and connected? And so I think that what you and I are talking about, and my heart goes out to you for what you've experienced, to say that this is now an extension of the work that you and I do to bring even a more expansive gift. And we are, in fact, going to put up a separate web page so that we can invite our listeners to get us information, because, honestly, I don't have information.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, I don't have information about the centers across the country.
Mm-hmm. The particular one where my parents were was a very good one. They did deal with the spirituality of the residents, and my mother had always been someone who read Daily Word, for example, every day for 50 years. I mean, she was in essence a spiritual teacher herself. And what happened because of the way they died, they had been married 70 years, and everyone at the care center and in the community said, well, this is beautiful, actually. They couldn't bear to be apart. And so even in their death, there was a spiritual teaching going on for all of us. So it had that silver lining part of it, too.
Mm.
But,
mm-hmm.
Well. Should I get back to your question? I'm sorry for digressing back there.
I'm thrilled that you talked about it, because you see what this show is about. This Street Smart Spirituality here on the Dr. Pat Show is, you know, it's really about a conversation that you and I are going to have about a number of different things. And this becomes part of the bigger question, the bigger vibration that helps people connect with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, the original question I asked you has to do with your journey, but also what you shared is part of your journey.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, and it is related, of course, Ed. My wife and I were seniors in college in 1963. We'd been married in the summer, and then in the fall of 63 was our last year in college. And when President Kennedy was assassinated on November 22nd, a couple days later, of course, we were all affected, as everybody was. A couple days later, I was walking by a Peace Corps recruitment booth at the university where we were getting our degrees. And I just decided, and my wife and I had talked about this, that, well, we have to do something in his honor. You know, he asked people, he formed the Peace Corps. And so we applied to the Peace Corps, and we were both admitted, accepted. There's a process you go through. And then when we graduated in the spring, in June, then we went for Peace Corps training during the summer at San Francisco State University, the state college at that time. And then in the fall, we went to Liberia. So it was really because of the assassination of President Kennedy. We hadn't talked about doing that before. We were both in education. We knew we wanted to teach. We'd been offered jobs in Minneapolis, Minnesota, but we didn't take those jobs. We went in the Peace Corps instead.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a decision, I guess, coming emotionally, and it was a decision we never regretted, because anytime someone goes overseas and does anything or travels, it opens doors. You meet people who are the friends for your rest of your life, and new overseas opportunities then open up. And so it was a very good decision. And we have Liberian friends who were my students back in the 60s who we're still in touch with, who live in the United States. And one of them, her daughter, is our godchild. And so, you know, you have these international ties that keep going. So, So it was a decision that led us into many other areas, including higher education after that, because of having been in the Peace Corps.
Well, you know, Dr. Hansen, I mean, all of this has to do with how willing we are to step out there and really honor the relationships that we make and rebuild. And, you know, what you just talked about for sure had to shape who you are today. You know, the topic that we got to, that you and I and I think Bobby put together for today's show was creating public myth, the 9/11 Commission Report. I mean, that's one aspect of what we're going to talk about today. But all of what you've done, all of your experiences, have led you to create a passion, a commitment, and a purpose to your message right now today.
Well, I guess that's true. And that starting off in the Peace Corps, I then was always interested in social justice issues. And even when I was working full-time, for many years in education as first a teacher and then a researcher and writer, I would always reserve time for these social action, social justice causes. So I don't know exactly how that starts in someone. It must come from our families also.
Mm-hmm.
Although, you know, in my family, we weren't consciously going out and working on projects, social justice projects, but there were certainly altruistic projects through our church and all, but I don't know exactly how it gets in your blood, but I just was never able to just do my regular work, and I often wondered about that. If I heard of a cause, I would try to work on it, even if I didn't know much about it at the time, and I've had some successes and some failures with it. So it's, you know, it's something that I've also had the opportunity to do, because the types of jobs that I had as a writer, I could write during the time when I wanted to write. So if I was writing a math book, I'd be part of a team working for a publisher. I would go off to my house in rural New Hampshire in the woods, and my job was to come up with new ideas, new ways to teach middle school math, let's say. And I just love to do that. I love to create something like that. But I could do it during the hours when I wanted to. So I was given the opportunity to work on other causes. And, you know, a lot of people aren't given that opportunity because they're at a desk in an office from 8 to 5, and it's not as easy for them. So that was, I don't know if I arranged that purposely at a soul level, mm-hmm. that I'd be in that position, or if it just happened. But it did enable it, certainly.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of like you. I have no idea at, you know, a very logical level of how I got to be on radio, 23 hours a week in just 3 short years from someone that never even entertained doing anything like this. So I like what you said about our soul's work, about our soul's connection, about how we're called to do this. But part of the equation, and something we're going to talk about right now, is your willingness to say yes. And when you talk about those passions, those things that you get behind, you're very passionate right now today. And I want to ask you, what is it right in this moment that you're very passionate about?
Well, I am, I guess passionate is the word. I'm passionate about what is happening to America, in my
mm-hmm.
view. And and I think, because 9/11 was the pivotal reason that we are doing much of what we're doing now, I was passionate to find out all that I could about the story of 9/11. And beyond what I was reading and hearing and watching. So after, you know, within a year or so after it happened, by 2002, there were some things that just didn't make sense. And I guess I became passionate about knowing more and more, because it's such a pivotal moment, and I still am. Just yesterday, I was in Washington, D.C., in Lafayette Park. There was a rally for 9/11 truth and peace. There were three groups that came together 9/11 truth groups and peace groups and an impeachment group, people who have different causes. And there, this was they had a permit for this rally. There was a stage and set up, and there were speakers talking about all of those subjects. And I sang one of the six songs that's on this new CD that I have, a song called False Flag. So I guess that takes some passion to write the songs and to be willing to go there. They invited me to sing there and to be willing to get up and do something that is not the doesn't seem to be the norm yet in thinking, although the polls, several national polls are showing that we're up around 50% of the people who believe there should be a new investigation of 9/11 because there were so many unanswered questions that the 9/11 Commission report didn't deal with, either omissions or information that just doesn't jive with what we seem to know, what witnesses have said. So I have, I guess, a passion to see that we have all of the answers, that all of the answers in the analysis of 9/11 that were given to us in the official version are really correct. I don't believe that they are all correct. And we've had, since 9/11, we know now that a lot of the information we were given before we went into Iraq in the fall of 2002 about whether they had weapons of mass destruction and so on was not as accurate, not presented as clearly and honestly as the public should have, as the public deserved. So when I look at that, I say, well, then we really do need to go back to 9/11 itself and see if there are, if these unanswered questions of 9/11 also were misrepresented to us, since it's such a critical turning point that we're in a war on terror that may go on for many years. And so that's a passion because I do not feel comfortable with the impression that other countries have that the United States has been heavy-handed in going into Iraq, ignoring UN resolutions. Other countries ignore them too. But we have, as you know, we're looked at differently now than we were before 9/11. And what I enjoyed about being in the Peace Corps, particularly in Liberia, was that we were very well respected there as Americans. They really loved having us there, and we were helping, and that was the experience in many, many countries. And it's not of, I'm sure Peace Corps is still welcomed every place, but there's a different image of America now than there was back then, and that I have a passion that the image be that America is the country that is going to bring this world to a place of peace. I actually have a line in one of these songs that I sang yesterday. And I just, it's not like we have, that I believe America has some sort of divine destiny, but I think given all that we were given when we started this country and all the diversity that we've been willing to take in, that we do have a unique responsibility to see that our diverse culture within our country works well, and we've done quite well with that. Not for everyone who's here, but also that then we go out and we live up to our ideals, the ideals that are stated in the Declaration of Independence, for example, in our Constitution, and I just don't see that we're doing that as effectively as we were before. And I understand we're in a state of reaction to a terrible crime that was committed, but I think there are some unanswered questions about that crime that need to be dealt with.
Well, I think that one of the things we're talking about here, Dr. Hansen, is this unbelievable place. You're a researcher, and I'm a researcher as well. My background, both in human resources and at the academic level. And one of the things that I have had a very difficult time understanding is, regardless of what side of the fence you fall on about the war or about this administration, the question that has been in my mind is, what happened to us? I mean, why is it that millions of people, people like you, people like me, that were marching around during the Vietnam War, perhaps, have lost our ability to ask the tough questions?
Well, I guess I have a little hard time understanding that, too, because I still ask those tough questions, I guess, and part of it. And I know during the Vietnam War, I was certainly one who was out marching now and then, and you know, to try to help end that war. And there, it was a strong movement. And of course, we know that before the invasion of Iraq, there were millions of people all over the world who were out marching and saying this is not a good idea. I mean, the experts were telling us with a passion that Saddam Hussein has held the factions within Iraq. You know, he's done it ruthlessly, but he's kept them from fighting each other in an all-out civil war. And if we go in there, we're going and get rid of him, then we're going to risk having that happen, and it will very likely happen, and we'll be in a long, protracted war. And, of course, that is exactly what has happened for whatever the reasons or mistakes that were made. Now, certainly a lot of people have passion about that, as General Petraeus is testifying now. I mean, there are reactions to it. There were some of these experts who were saying, we told you so. We don't like to be saying we told you so, but we did. And we're really stuck now because, you know, it's difficult for us to stay there, and it's difficult for us to get out. Now, I really think a lot of people have passion about this war. That's for certain. And we have had many demonstrations of several hundred thousand people before the war and after the war started in Washington and other places. It doesn't seem to have as much of an effect on this administration as it did during the Johnson and then the Nixon administrations. And I guess I'm not a political scientist. I don't know exactly how to analyze that. I think people have as much passion about it as they did, but why is it that it doesn't have as much an effect? This administration.
I'd like to open up the phone lines because
okay.
I really want to invite a conversation from folks on this to get their opinion, to get their comment, and to find out where people are with this conversation. The number here is toll free 877-876-5227. 877-876-5227. The conversation we're having is one of probing and questioning. It's one where we get to explore our soul's journey, and we get to look at this place of moving beyond the dogma, moving beyond the myth, and stating what's real for us. You know, I went to your website, Dr. Hansen, and the website I want to give out, I think it's, here it is, cosmiccooperation.com, cosmiccooperation.com/hiding9/11. And so I was reading over some of the information, and I was blown away by some of the statistics that you have on here from different studies. The one that let's just go over these for a little bit. The CBS New York Times poll showed in October 2006, that fewer than 20% of Americans believe that they have been given the full truth about 9/11. So, you know, they believe that the government is either hiding something. But then as we go on and we look at a poll in August of 2006 by Scripps, Ohio University, reported that 36 Americans agree with the statement, and this is the statement, federal officials either participated in the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon or took no action to stop them because they wanted the U.S. to go to war in the Middle East. That's 36%. You know, statistically, that's a lot of people. And
yeah.
So what was classified as a fringe phenomenon right now, is really mainstream. But the bigger question is, how does this vibration of fear and mistrust filter into every day of our lives?
Yeah, and as you say, and I think you probably noted there that Time Magazine said also when they reported on that Scripps Ohio University poll that 36% is getting to be quite a few people, you know, and it is not a fringe movement. You know, most of those, and that's sort of the most extreme statement, the statement you read. Now, you know, the statement that earlier in the October poll that we haven't been given the full truth, that doesn't mean that the people who said they agreed with that believe there was prior knowledge or it may have just been incompetence or what. But the Scripps Ohio one, the 36%, that's a very strong statement. And so those are people, I know a number of people who would have answered that question that way, and I would have answered that question that way too. I would have wanted to make some qualifications, though, because I'd want to say, you know, there a lot of this is just unanswered yet because of the secrecy that has gone around 9/11 through this administration and through the commission report, that we don't know quite what to think, and we're being put in a position of sort of fearing the world and fearing more terrorism. And we can draw conclusions that that this attack against us, that there was collusion with it. And, you know, so we begin to fear our own government as well, I guess is what I'm saying. The fear goes there, too. And, you know, so those there are people who have this very definite fear. You know, these poll results have been pretty consistent. There was another poll in May 2006, a Zogby poll, that's a reputable pollster, indicated that 42% of Americans believe that the government and the 9/11 Commission have covered up evidence that contradicts the official story. So we have a pretty strong movement out there. Yesterday, just as a little anecdotal example of it, after... There were a couple hundred of us there in Lafayette Park, right across from the White House yesterday, all day. And after the program, there were some speakers, and I did the singing. And then a group of about 100 walked peacefully, but carrying signs about 9/11 truth, from Lafayette Park down Pennsylvania Avenue on the sidewalk to the Capitol, to outside the Capitol. As we were walking, we were at one corner waiting for a light, and a woman, a middle-aged woman, came out of an office building. There was a lot of glass right there, and she could see us. She left her desk, and she came out, and I happened to be the person she came right up to, and she said, "I'm so glad you people are out here, and, you know, I want you to know that we talk about this in our offices, and that there's a silent majority that agrees with what you're doing. But we've got to work. We're in here." But it is it brought up. It was heartening for her to say that. And she said, "Please keep it up. Keep it up." But you know, we were 100 people, is all, and there aren't very many people who are. According to the polls, there are a lot of people who think the way I'm thinking about this, that we need more investigation. But there aren't very many who are willing to go out and do something about it. And I think part of that is we're in a bit of a state of fear in the country. We know because of the Patriot Act and presidential directives that it's easier for us to be mistakenly picked up or charged with something. If you know, it may not be anything a devious reason we were charged with something, but it's easier for it to happen now. Habeas corpus is not, we still have it, but it's not as easy for us to exercise that right. So what I'm finding is a lot of people who agree with the message in my songs and the message that a lot of speakers have, but when it comes to going to a meeting or going out on the street to hold a sign, there aren't very many who are willing to do that. We get a lot of people driving by, honking their horns, putting their thumbs up and saying, "Keep at it." Now, actually, there was a national call, which did not appear in the regular media yesterday, for a strike. You know, leave your job for the day. Go out. I wasn't one who made that call, but that call was made. And most people never heard about it, of course. It wasn't in the major media, but they probably wouldn't have done that if they had heard about it, because there's something, when you are out in the street about 9/11, you have people react to you in a very negative way at times. They'll call you a traitor. They'll tell you to move to another country. They'll yell many things at you. And so I can understand why not many people want to stand up on stage or stand out in the audience. Now, I will say I heard that would have been Monday, Stephen Jones, he's a former, a retired professor from Brigham Young University, who was a physicist, and he's one of the major scientists who is studying the collapse of the World Trade Center towers, and he believes it was a controlled demolition, that they didn't come down just from the crash of the planes and the fire. And there's he has a whole lot of data to support his hypothesis, and he's had refereed a journal article that supports that. Anyway, he gave a talk in, Bloomington, Indiana, not at the university, someplace else in Bloomington, Monday, and 300 people came. Another person who's gone around to talk a lot is Professor Emeritus David Ray Griffin from the Claremont School of Theology in California. Mm-hmm. He's written several books.
I graduated Claremont.
Oh, yes, I saw that you did.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and so he was a professor there. He's retired now, but he's written several books about 9/11, and he's given talks a number of places, including on C-SPAN. C-SPAN has had several of these researchers on talking about 9/11. So there's a lot of education out there, and there are people who are starting to be willing to come out and voice their opinion about it. But there's also a lot of fear. I've had people a number of times because I go out and I'm just singing songs and talking, and they'll say, are you sure you should be doing this? Aren't you afraid that they're going to do something to you, they, whoever that is? And
mm-hmm.
I say, well, yeah, I have a little bit of that fear. Because I like Cynthia McKinney, for example, who the former congresswoman. There's a video about her work on the war, you know, resisting the plan to go into Iraq, and then afterwards. And also, she's talked about 9/11. And for a while, she had to keep her drapes closed at her home because there was people were threatening to shoot her. And I don't mean people, you know, from the administration or from the government, but you know, there are people in our country who will react that way. So yeah, there is a certain amount of fear. There's a fear of ridicule, also, fear of not being of being patriotic, and that is troublesome to me. That so many people I will talk to, they'll recognize that it's a fearful situation to speak up in our country. That wasn't so much true, I think, during the Vietnam War. I don't know if you'd agree with that, but I felt when I was...
I think I was too young to know the difference, even if there was. I mean, I'd love to be able to get a couple of young folks on the phone here that are from this generation. I know that during Vietnam and subsequent years, I don't think that I stopped long enough, given the way that I was raised, given the Kennedy administration, given the times that we were in. I don't think that I thought long enough to worry about whether the government was going to come after me. It just wasn't that time.
Mm-hmm.
But we clearly knew that, you know, anyone that either was for or against the Vietnam War, doesn't matter what side you were on, it was clear that you were going to have a confrontation. And this is what I'm saying. It was a level of coming together that had to do with the confrontation. Now what I see is in the spirit of, and I love to go back to the point of spirituality, because whenever I get to that place where it's really difficult for me to logically, you know, force my way through an issue, the question is, what would spirit do in this situation? What would God do in this situation? What would Jesus do in this situation? What would Allah do in this situation? What would Buddha do in this situation? What would ISIS do in this situation? I mean, there are places where we can go to create the positive change. I mean, when we think about it, we go back to Vietnam, we didn't have people like Marianne Williamson who went out into the world and continues to do this and says, I think we need a Department of Peace right now. I think we need to get a fully funded Department of Peace. So it's an interesting place to find ourselves right now in time. In an interview I did not too long ago, we were talking about generations of people. And we went through, and this individual knew quite a bit about Generation X, Generation Y, Generation Z, whatever the labels are. And he said, there's a new generation that has been born. And I said to him, what is that generation? He said, it's the F. F is in Frank generation. And I said, F? I was almost afraid to ask him what that meant. He says, it's the fear generation. He said there is a generation of young people growing up that if they hear a book drop, as a book can drop on a desk, will duck under cover for fear of it being a shot. So you see where we have gone in the evolution of this conversation?
Oh, sure. Yeah, and that fear, and it's not just because of 9/11, as you're saying, but that's been a big part of it. It's there all the time, right? And I guess maybe one example of there not being as much fear during the Vietnam era. I was a teacher in Minneapolis at that time in Minneapolis Central High School in the late 60s, math teacher. And there was a large demonstration was going to take place in Minneapolis against the war. And we got a notice all the teachers in the whole district that if you wanted to attend that demonstration, then you could apply and you would be released from your teaching duties that day, and a substitute would be hired. And I did that. Now, that was a lot different than now. I didn't have a fear of retribution because I went to march in that protest of the war. And the school administration actually thought it was a worthwhile cause, I guess. They weren't taking sides, but they were giving us that opportunity. Well, that's quite a bit different now. We wouldn't have that situation. The spirituality issue is a big one for me because I spent many years writing songs about spirituality. I sang at attitudinal healing workshops. I sang at one where Marianne Williamson was the speaker in New Haven, Connecticut in 98, and I was one of the two or three singers providing music, and I wrote songs about Course in Miracles topics, and I sang at Course in Miracles groups and conventions, and that's always been a big part of my life. I wrote a book about it called Trying to Remember that we are spiritual beings having a physical experience. It's on my website. It's free for download. It's a small book. So I have a lot of friends because of that who very much value their own spiritual experiences, and they know a lot. And many of them tell me I'm doing the wrong thing by writing songs about 9/11 or by offering a different view of the war. They say, you know, what you should be doing is meditating, and you don't change the world outside, you only change it within yourself, and I understand that, and you should be sending light to these situations, and that's what they do, and I value that. For myself, I've always had to do a combination of action in the world and hope that my spiritual practice allows me to go into a situation like yesterday, right across the street from the White House, singing this song, and looking at the White House as I'm singing it. I worked very hard to be in a place of peace so I had no anger in the song and no anger toward anyone who might be covering up the truth of 9/11. And I think that's, I don't say I always succeed at that, but that's part of my own spiritual practice. So what I personally try to do is combine the two.
Yeah. Well, have you heard Marianne Williamson speak lately?
Well, not real lately, but I've...
Let me just share something with you, because this really talks to the issue that we're talking about here. I totally believe that you can come from a place of love and still take outrageous action in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what I'm saying. I think we get confused between spirituality and spirituality and inaction. And the last time I was side by side, right there with Marianne Williamson, was at the Sacred Activism Conference that was in Seattle in 2006. And contrary to, I think, what a lot of people wanted her to talk about, she really challenged people to take action, especially around the Department of Peace. So she didn't necessarily come in and talk about the Course of Miracles, but she came with an integrated message that demonstrated to people that what her journey is about right now, it's about action. As a matter of fact, she made it really clear that she spends a lot of her time in Washington, D.C., to actually get a bill passed for the Department of Peace.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this strange place that I think that folks find themselves these days. It's the place you're talking about, where we believe that if we take action to speak our word in what we believe true is true, that we cannot do that in the spirit of love. And I don't agree. I believe that as human beings, we could stand tall, stand for a cause, and I say this to all of you listening to the show, regardless of what side of the fence you're on, because there are many sides of this story. And can we do it in a way where we honor and respect each other at the very core of our being, human beings?
Mm-hmm.
So each of us has the right to ask questions and to get information.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree fully with you, and I like the way you said all of that. And I know, from what I know of Marianne Williamson, and I have met her and talked with her on one occasion, but I don't mm-hmm. know her personally. But I know that her action has been, I guess what I'd say, a very positive action with the Department of Peace work and working mm-hmm. with Congressman Kucinich and Conyers, Congressman
right.
Conyers, and they have 50-some co-signers to the legislation. It doesn't seem to increase the number of co-signers. But even that positive, which I would call positive action that Marianne takes, there have been people who have criticized her for even getting involved in the political
relentlessly.
Arena. Yeah, and I disagree with people who are criticizing her on that. And I know I was around that conference that I told you about. That was when her book came out about I can't remember the exact the spirituality of America or the destiny of America or something like
mm-hmm.
that. And
mm-hmm.
and at that time, there were people who would criticize her for getting involved in that detail of America. But she was able to do it by attaching herself to a vision of the Department of Peace. And I think that is extremely important because I sort of think that two things have to happen at the same time. That vision has to be expressed in a concrete way, which the Department of Peace is an example of it. Not saying it's the end-all, that it's perfect, but, it deals with a lot of conflict resolution at the family level and international level and everything. So we have to deal with a vision of what the world can be like that's pretty specific. But I'm wondering, at the same time, somebody has to uncover the darkness. Now, we know as individuals in our personal lives that if we have shadow, within us, things that need to come up, maybe even from a past life if a person believes in that. And we have a lot of workshops and we do a lot of work on ourselves. So I know a lot of my friends who might say that that's important work, and they go to those kinds of workshops, and they see that you need both at the same time. You need the vision of who you really are as a spiritual being, but you also need to be able to look at yourself and see what it is as a personality you have done that needs to be corrected or forgiven. I guess forgiven would be the word in A Course in Miracles teaching. But when we start to look at a national level or political level, I would contend that we have to do the same thing. We have to have the kind of vision which would be exemplified through the Department of Peace work, and we also have to uncover those sort of dark and dirty aspects of our own governance system in America that need to come to light and be healed. and be forgiven and be corrected. Mary Ann works on that vision part, and that's extremely important. I guess I'd say right now I and a few others are working on that shadow part that we think is around 9/11 and needs to come out and not be there for the next 40 or 50 years, that it needs to come out and be forgiven. Maybe we need a truth and reconciliation process like they had in South Africa, something that would allow it to come out. That's sort of my spiritual view of things, that as the individual and as a society, we need both streams going at once. I have that in my book also. We've got to have the vision, and we've got to clear out what is holding us back before
we'll realize.
Pardon me?
Yeah. Exactly. Let's think about it from the point of toxicity. What you're talking about, and when you mention the word forgiveness, I call forgiveness spiritual dynamite, because it is the one thing, the one single thing that I know of that works better than anything else to unclog the sludge of our past. And so if and when, at any point in time in our lives, we can get to a place where we forgive, and when I say can forgive, and this is what you and I think are agreeing about, I'm not saying that we condone it. I would never say, to someone who just has had their child shot down at Virginia Tech, okay, forgive and let everything move on as if you agree. You don't condone the act. But those folks at Virginia Tech did something amazing. They not only put up milestones, they put up, a stone head for the victims, but they put a symbol of the actual children. And so what we have here are lessons that we can learn, and we can teach each other about forgiveness, because without that, I believe it's difficult to have an open, honest communication with each other.
Mm-hmm. And that's quite a bit of what was done in South Africa with the Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
Right.
Where I can't remember if there were 7,000 cases. At one time, I think that was the number I read about, where people did come into this setting. It's not exactly like a courtroom, of course, and they would confess what they had done. And the families would be there, the families of the victims, and it was all, I'm sure all the cases, they varied a lot at the degree of crime that was committed. But the idea Nelson Mandela had and others, Desmond Tutu, and that we're going to have to go through this kind of process. There will be responsibility for your conduct. It doesn't mean everybody is just off free. There are people who served time and paid those families and so forth. But it was a whole different approach than a regular court system, because it was such a large number of people who were going to have to confess and be forgiven. And from what I've read, I haven't been to South Africa, but from what I've read, it has worked quite well. And I think for some of the things that have gone on in America for the last number of years, we may need a process like that. Because I believe when we have the truth, for example, of 9/11, we're going to find out there were some people who were letting it happen. Perhaps found out what was going to happen, and there's quite a bit of evidence that the United States was warned a number of times by 12 different countries that this was coming, with some varying degree of specificity in these different warnings. And there's quite a bit of evidence that there are people who look the other way. And so are we going to, when all this comes out, we're going to have a process where, if that's a fairly large number of people, where there is a truth and reconciliation process. I've also done quite a bit of work in the last few years on the UFOET issue. And that's through the Disclosure Project. I was a volunteer with them. It's headquartered right in my town here. So in the early 2001, 2002, and 2003, I was a volunteer there quite a bit of the time. And I really do believe there's a lot of evidence, if people are willing to look at it, that issue has been covered up for the last 60 years. and that there are some things done in secret within not within the White House, let's say, but within intelligence agencies working with corporations to keep that from people, and do reverse engineering of technology and spend our money for that and without any congressional oversight. And there's just a whole lot that's gone on. And when all of that comes out, there's going to have to, again, be a forgiveness process somehow, because this is going on.
Well, tell us what, you know, I'd be interested in knowing what you think the most shocking evidence around that issue is from your perspective,
sure.
Because you are involved in that. And I think we hear a lot of different stories, but I would like to hear your perspective on what you think is going to blow people away.
Well, I think the most persuasive evidence comes from the Disclosure Project. This was a project started in the 90s by Dr. Stephen Greer, G-R-E-E-R, and the website's disclosureproject.org. And what Dr. Greer and his associates have done over the years is pull together testimony of 400 witnesses. These are former government, intelligence, corporate, scientific, military people who now have a story to tell, and they have told it to him, and it's on tape. They have products of 100 of these witnesses are on several different videotapes and DVDs that the Disclosure Project made, and in books. And, you know, their evidence is really persuasive. And what they want is to be able to testify in Congress under oath of what they know. And they're former astronauts. And that, to me, is not, well, it's not a blockbuster evidence, I guess, that is so shocking. Individual cases are shocking, but I think it's just that there are so many of them who are willing to come forward and give their names and want to testify that if, I mean, millions of people have gone to that website and seen the videos, so we do have a lot of people who believe that this has been covered up for many, many years, and it continues to be covered up. And what I think is going to be shocking about it is that when it began, actually even before Roswell of 1947, and then during all these decades, a whole culture of secrecy and even murdering people who would reveal the secrets has gradually grown. And there is an element that controls this that's not in control by Congress. It's not generally anyone in the White House. They are given very little information about it. And it's really an alternative form of governance of this issue. But the idea that there are extraterrestrial beings who have visited us and actually communicated with humans in in part of our military and part of our government is a real shocker, because we the people didn't have the knowledge of this, and decisions were made about human relations with extraterrestrials that we the people should have been making, or our representatives should have been making, and that is not the case. For example, there is evidence that in 1954, President Eisenhower, he didn't really wish to do this, but the Joint Chiefs of Staff persuaded him to sign a treaty with extraterrestrials. There are people who testify to having, they will testify under oath. They have seen that treaty, the evidence of it. And now, if that is true, I don't have absolute proof of that, but if that is true, then that's a treaty that was not supervised by the Senate. It wasn't ratified. Now, I'm pretty sure it actually happened. I know someone who has seen it, and he's afraid to come forward. There are a number of people like this. They won't come forward publicly, some of them. So if that really has happened, that's just one example, then a whole culture outside of our normal system of checks and balances developed, and this culture included the extreme need for secrecy that meant that the ends were, the means were justified by the ends. So we have had people ridiculed and actually eliminated even over that issue. What I think then happens is that when something like 9/11 occurs, that same culture of secrecy that's been going on for so long can get transferred to a new topic.
Mm-hmm.
And we are threatened by external terrorism, but the reaction to it, and perhaps even the cooperation with it, grows out of that culture of secrecy that's been growing for the last 50 or 60 years. So I actually think there's a relationship between the those two issues of extraterrestrial civilizations having visited us and our current approach to battling terrorism through a tougher approach at home that affects all of our basic rights.
Mm-hmm.
And creates more secrecy and makes us fearful. And, you know, maybe it's sort of a, maybe there's some sort of message that we're supposed to get here about how we can not be fearful of all of that. Because when you really study it, you know, when I really study the 9/11 issue, after a few weeks of it and talking to people in Washington and other places and reading, I have to get away from that. And
mm-hmm.
that's why I like music. It helps me get away from it. But I,
well, yeah, absolutely it does. I mean, it is a lot of what people call negative energy and negative vibration to be around. But one of the things that you've done is you've stood up for who you are and you stood up for the truth. Before we go, and we're going to have to go in a minute or so, I want to let people know of the special offer that you have for them.
Yeah, the CD. That I,
exactly.
Hiding 9/11. I have a home, you know, small little recording, digital recording studio. You can get those now pretty cheaply. And I recorded this myself with the idea that I would give them away. And
okay.
I had 1,000 made, and I do send them out free to people if they write to me. My email address, should I give that?
Let's give out the email address for folks that want a CD. This is the email address that you can request it.
Well, actually, you know, you gave them my website address, and my email address is on there. That tells them how to get in touch with me to request a CD, or all the songs are on my website, and they can download them free. I have a statement on the CD and the website that permission is given to make copies, put it on the Internet, play it anywhere.
Okay.
So they're welcome to do that, and it's just an education process. I'm still an educator, they can agree with it or not, but I would encourage them to do their own investigation.
All right, let me give out that website again, www.cosmiccooperation.com/hiding911. That's where you can get a request a copy of the free CD. Dr. Hansen, thank you so much for joining the show today and for sharing your thoughts and for sharing some of the action that you're taking and inviting people to participate as well.
Thank you, Dr. Pat. Thank you for having me on the show, and I really appreciated the conversation.
Well, this is our Street Smart Spirituality Hour here on the Dr. Pat Show. For those of you that want to tap into hundreds of archives on our website, check it out, www.thedrpatshow.com, thedrpatshow.com. Check it out, or right here on BBS Radio, go to my host page on BBS Radio and click on all the links, and it'll take you right there. I want to thank everyone for tuning in and listening. Thank everyone on BBS Radio. And know this, you have the right to decide what your life is to be about. So step out into the world and choose well.